What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. Bick Nazar is with me, and we are here live at the Nat for a nooner. First time live at the Nat of the year, and hey, the weather has cooperated. After some not great spring weather over the last couple of weeks, beautiful sunny day right now at the Nat. It's going to warm up. It's going to be fantastic. So if you've got some time off this afternoon, or really even if you don't, make some time off. Come on down, grab tickets. The Seas are taking on the Tri-City Dust Devils at 1 o'clock here at the Nat. We will be on the air right until 1 o'clock. We'll turn you over to Tyler Zickel for the game broadcast then. So come on down. Grab some tickets, enjoy a beer, enjoy a hot dog, and take in a nooner at the Nat. Come say hi as well. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the mobile Kintech studio at the Nat. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet! What are you waiting for? 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I'm calling it Canucks Talk, but really it's going to be like an unholy hybrid of Canucks Talk and the People's Show today. So we'll get our Canucks conversation in. We'll do guys naming dudes.
The Canucks People's Talk Show?
The People's
it's
Canucks
vibes,
Show.
Vibes Talk.
Vibes Talk?
Yeah.
Vibes Talk. Vibes Talk.
I mean, we're outside.
It's sunny.
Nooner at the Nat. Yeah, Nooner. Anuna.
Oh, man. Nate from Comox texted in.
First text in.
Yeah, this is tough. What a blessing. The show starts at 11 today. I had a rare Friday off, and my truck broke down. No better way to spend a two-hour wait for a tow. Let's go, boys. Bring my good Friday vibes back up. Nate, that's tough, man. We're going to do our best.
Two-hour wait for a tow.
We're going to do our best. Wait, man. Breakdown, flat tire, waiting for a tow. It sucks so much.
I just feel like we just found a market inefficiency that we should launch a tow trucking business in Comox. 2 hours? What's going on here?
In Comox. We'll do our best, Nate. We'll do our best to help you out while you wait for that tow.
It's a side hustle right there.
Brendan Batchelor is going to join us at 11:30, and we might have a chance to chat with Tyler Zickel at some point here. Get the scoop on the Seas season so far. But we'll do a little Canucks talk right off the top here. So I know that
it is Canucks talk.
Yeah, well, it is Canucks talk, so that's what we do. It's like, look, it's a straightforward idea. We named the show Canucks Talk. We talk about the Canucks. We should just get this out of the way. I know Rick Dhaliwal not reporting that a deal was imminent on his hit with Halford and Brough this morning, but certainly, you know, giving a little more. I don't know that we've ever really heard somebody put kind of numbers, reporting numbers on a Tyler Myers deal.
It's been loosely suggested.
There's been like speculation,
yeah.
But there's always like, are we crossing the line from speculation to I'm hearing, sourcing, you know what I mean? And the update from Rick Dhaliwal was, he thinks when it gets done with Tyler Myers, which it will, which is no surprise, should be about 2 to 3 years at around $3 million, maybe even slightly under $3 million. And again, we don't know the details. Dhaliwal's not reporting it's imminent, not reporting that it's done or anything like that, but just using that as a general framework. I mean, let's take the low end of the term and the high water mark of the AAV, 2 years, $3 million. I think there'd be a lot of Canucks fans pretty happy with that.
Getting
Tyler Myers at a 50% discount from where he was this year for only 2 more years, so not even the big term commitment. If that's the kind of neighborhood we're talking about, yeah, go get the deal done, bring him back.
If the number even starts with a 2 AAV.
I mean, that's incredible.
That is like,
that's a home run.
Tyler Myers is doing a huge favor to the team, and I know he's been subject to a lot of scorn over 5 years, but if that AAV starts with a 2, man, that should be alleviated real fast.
Yes.
That level of scrutiny. And look, part of it comes with a $6 million price tag, of course.
Yep.
But there's just been a lot of complaints in general over the course of 5 years with from fans about Tyler Myers. But I'm telling you, if that number starts with a 2, what a win. Because, look.
Now, it might be the case that, is it, you know, $3 million for 2 years, or is it, you know, 2.75 for 3 or something like that, right? So do you have to add the extra term? Total money.
Total money.
Total money.
I pointed at Jamie, and he knew right away what I was going to say. It's like, oh, why are we figuring out the years and the term? Well, because of total money.
Did Sat Shaw just walk in here? Are we talking about total money?
Look, I was on that. I was on that before Sat.
But, you know, so, for me, I would probably rather bump the AAV all the way up to 3 and take that 2-year term, right, on a defenseman. You're kind of looking as a now transitional veteran guy, right? But, look, 3 years, you lower it. I think there's a lot of contracts that can work for the Canucks in that range. And, you know, it's I think the other important part about it, and I know
Rick Dhaliwal mentioned, you know, the Canucks are working the phones a lot, trying to make trades. We can get into some conversations about, you know, their trade pieces and what they should do with some of their players that are under contract here as well. But I think if they are able to get this deal done, you know, not today, but let's say next week at some point with Tyler Myers, they've got so much work ahead of them. There's value to, okay, locking in what you can lock in, right? Especially if it's at such a reasonable cost. You're not having to pay a premium to bring him back. Because if you don't have Tyler Myers under contract, well, your only right shot guy is Noah Juulsen.
Yeah,
under contract. Now, and Phil Hronek's under team control, but that's so much work to do on one side of the defense before you even get to everything else your team needs. So just a really important thing, I think, to be able to tackle it early in the offseason.
And if you don't get Tyler Myers done, I feel like that raises the importance of Filip Hronek.
Mm.
Right? Because if you get Tyler Myers done, then it's like, okay, you've got another body there, and you can go explore
other options. Yeah, you're at least not staring at a blank slate. Then.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Where it's just like, oh boy, we could be hooped.
And look, there's a reality. Like, I'm okay with the idea of you start the season with Noah Juulsen as your number six,
mm-hmm.
and over the course of a season, you make a trade pending what your season is going like. But if it's trending well and you can get to the deadline and they say, hey, well, let's bolster, and you can go get a guy and start pushing guys down the lineup, that to me is an okay reality, because I don't think you're going to solve all the problems this summer. And, you know, you should leave some flexibility open to solve some things as the season goes along. You don't know what opportunities are going to present themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be rigid on opening day of training camp, right? Especially where the Canucks are. They're not in the fourth year of a multi-year build. They're in year two, basically, of building this out. There should be some openings to create. And, yeah, if you can get Myers done, it always felt like it was going to get done, because
yeah.
he knew at some point there was going to be a hometown discount. He did more than well enough. Like, as far as just raw point totals, like, Tyler Myers this year among right-handed D-men finished 25th in scoring.
Yeah.
25th.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that, hey, come playoff time, like, he played some big, big minutes against tough opposition. And, like, it's you're not finding two, even $3 million D-men to potentially play 22 minutes in the playoffs for you.
And kill penalties at a high level and also chip in offensively, right? That's a really, really tough thing to find. Who's also a good teammate. You know, at this point, one of the longest tenured Canucks, right?
Like, let's say it's another three-year deal.
Yeah.
Okay? He's on pace to play over 500 games for the Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll have more games than if Chris Tanev never resigns here, or if Sammy, like, he might have played more games.
I think it's even
Salo.
Yeah, and even if it's a 2-year deal, he'll have played more games or more seasons for the Canucks than either Buffalo or Winnipeg, right? And those aren't short stops,
yeah.
You know, like, he was there, so, like, he'll kind of fashioning himself as you're going to first think of Tyler Myers
as a Canuck yeah.
when his career ends. Also, and I know, I think we talked about this at some point earlier in the season, but I was choked when he got injured, because, like, he was going to hit 1,000 games.
Right.
That last game 82, which I thought would have been just really awesome. It was against Winnipeg and just, like, a really great moment for him with the season. And I was a little concerned that he'd go somewhere else and have that 1,000 game marker somewhere other than Vancouver. But, hey, if he gets the deal done early next year, gets to celebrate. Yeah, I was concerned. I wanted to see it for him. I was enjoying Tyler Myers' renaissance.
But he was going
to
sign somewhere else next year. Anyway.
No, I know, but I wanted to be in Vancouver.
Oh,
because don't you think it would be kind of awkward to go to a new team and, like, game two, they have to throw a big ceremony for you?
Who did that recently? Didn't Giroux? Giroux, they waited till his 1,000th game.
Yeah,
I feel like that happened recently.
Maybe, but I just got to feel like, no, you want to be somewhere where you have some history when you get that 1,000-game ceremony.
They got to put the bill on the
exactly
the stick and all the things afterwards. You know, very secretly. And everyone playing along, or listening right now, can play along. What do you think Tyler Myers, and look, I know plus minus is in everything. What do you think Tyler Myers' plus minus is in Vancouver through 5 years?
Ooh.
And I'll even throw a bonus one. What do you think his plus minus is through his career?
Okay, through 5 years in Vancouver?
Yeah.
I'm going to say, like, a minus 20.
Okay. So I was doing this exercise
yeah.
yesterday. And I was like, yeah, probably like a minus 15.
Yeah.
It's even.
Wow.
It's even.
Good for him, man.
He was plus 16 this year to get it back to even.
Right.
And then throughout the course of his career, he's plus 9. Look, plus minus isn't anything, and over 995 games, plus 9 isn't this banner thing. But the reputation at times with Tyler Myers mm-hmm. is, oh, like, there's a guy that's good for a goal against. But the reality is, it's like, he's played in tough environments. Some of it is self-inflicted. But end of the day, over the course of 360 games in Vancouver, it's even. That's like, I was taken aback by that.
Yeah.
And it's a credit to what he's done this year and 2 years ago as well.
Corbett texts in, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Myers would probably want a no-trade clause. And, yeah, I mean, if you're playing ball to take a team-friendly deal to stay in a city you love near where you live, part of the deal there is going to be no-trade protection, right? That's just kind of baked in to this scenario. So, yes, I think that's just that you go in with eyes wide open knowing that's going to be part of the deal if you're doing this type of contract extension with Tyler Myers. So I have no problem with that whatsoever. Okay, 650-650. Keep those texts coming in. And if we do get any further updates on where things stand with the Canucks and Tyler Myers, we will pass them along. But
650-650. I was going to say minus 70.
Look, I think that's the perception.
Yeah.
Not minus 70, but minus 20 to what you said.
Yeah,
I think that's the perception, and there he is, even. Well, and the same texture says, you know, the team had a lot of terrible seasons, right? So it's like, even saying minus 20, it's not me slamming Tyler Myers. It's just he was playing in a really tough environment for a bunch of years there.
I've called him the Inkblot D-Man, so being even is kind of perfect for it, too.
Yes.
He is the Rorschach chest of D-Man.
But honestly, like, there's value to finding a guy who can log big minutes and be even. There's a lot of value to that. Like, how many teams would kill to have a guy like that?
It's not normal to have a guy who can play. Like, if you really needed to, like, play Tyler Myers, you know, 22, 24 minutes in the playoffs, like, he's got the physical capability to do it. It's not, I don't know if it's something you want to do all the time, but the fact is, like, he did play 22 minutes in a game against Edmonton, and you feel comfortable doing that sometimes because he can pull it off.
All right, so much of the conversation about the Canucks going into the summer obviously has been about the slate of UFAs and the RFA in Filip Hronek, who might, you know, probably the biggest priority of the bunch. But, you know, we were talking just a little bit before the show, and they've got a bunch of interesting decisions that they can make on players who are under contract for them going into next year. And, you know, you look at, like, we've heard, look, are they going to try to do something with Ilya Mikheyev? Sure, right? Could Nils Höglander be a potential trade chip? Yeah, absolutely. But farther up the lineup a little bit, you know, one thing that I think people know but maybe haven't fully kind of realized is Brock Besser's eligible for an extension in, what, a month and one day? On July 1st. And, you know, last year of a deal where it was a three-year deal, 6.65 AAV, and, of course, there was so much fretting about that contract for the first couple of years, right? And is it negative value? Can you move him? You know, can you bring him back? What do you have to do here? And then, of course, he has the breakout 40-goal season and then goes out and is probably their best forward in the playoffs. Was just a monster for them in the playoffs. So it creates this really interesting dynamic because on the one hand, you're always reluctant to lock up a player when they're having right after their career year, right? Like, okay, hold on, you haven't never really done that before. It's your first real playoff run. Is this real? Do we want to be paying you like that player? On the other hand, if you wait a year, if you don't sign Brock Besser this summer, he's a pending you unrestricted free agent, and the salary cap's going up. And if he does it again, and you're sitting here in February before the trade deadline, and he's on pace for another 40-goal season, and the salary cap is going up, that valuation for Brock Besser, who's still only 27, that could get out of hand in a hurry if you don't make a move to sign him this summer.
Well, I think it's already going to get out of hand anyways, right? You put up a 40-goal season, those guys get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in an eerily similar position, different age range, though, but that JT Miller was in, where, sure, I can play out another season on the final year of my deal, but, like, is Brock Besser going to have a better season than he just did? It's not that he can't have a close to it, but if you're Brock Besser, is it worth playing the season out rather than just cashing in now? Because you can make a fantastic case, if you are the Besser camp, that you should be paid pretty handsomely. That, like, I know we've thrown some numbers around Jake Gensel, and not that I think it's going to get close to that, but not so dissimilar to that. Like, again, we always reference the names of, like, Anders Lee and Jeff Skinner. Like, those guys have gotten paid. Like, I can make a statistical argument that Brock Besser should get the Timo Meier contract. He's been just as productive as Timo Meier, if not more.
Well, and one of the funny things about the Besser conversation in Vancouver was always, for as much disappointment as there was sometimes from fans for the goal-scoring aspect, dropping off after his rookie year. His point production has always been at a very high level.
On a point-per-game basis,
in his NHL career, he has 384 points in 479 regular season games. That's a really good number, right? And as you, to your point, you combine that with a 40-goal season on your resume, a track record of hyper-consistent point production at a pretty high level, not a superstar level, but a high level, and then you go out and you add the defensive component this year, right, being part of a line that matched up against best players, showing up in the playoffs in a big way, adding that clutch factor, and you're right. I mean, he's really setting himself up. So then the question becomes, what would it take to, like, what would the Canucks have to do to entice Brock Besser away from, hey, one more year and then I'm a free agent? Because I hear your point, you know, are you going to have a better year or are you really going to set yourself up better next year?
Now, to be fair, JT had a better year than his 99-point season.
But also, right now, you're negotiating with one team, right? In a year, you can negotiate with 32 teams.
Yeah.
And that's always the difference. Even if you know you have 33 goals next year, is that really going to cost you money if you're an unrestricted free agent going into the summer?
Yeah, fair enough.
You're Brock Besser? So I think he can have even a little bit of regression and still be in a really, really strong spot as a UFA next year.
But I suppose that's the point, right, is how much regression, right? Because he hadn't scored 30 goals before. Balloons up to 40. And you think, all right, is this something that's going to be consistently viable? But it also begs the question, you know, should the Canucks explore this? I think the whole medical issue has kind of put a damper on everything.
Yep.
Because I had that not happened, I'd be curious if his name would be floated around. But now this has happened, it's just going to put a delay on everything.
I think we'd be hearing more about him in every respect.
Yeah.
Extension, even trade talk,
yeah,
if it wasn't for the medical issue. Right now, I think the trade thing is complicated because, again, right, a player has a breakout year, 1 year left on UFA, there's always going to be impulse to say, hey, sell high. Right? You've got this incredible asset now. He's rebuilt his value. Teams would be happy to take on that contract for one more year, excited to get the goal-scoring punch. What can you get for him? It's complicated by, one, obviously the health issues, but also he plays the position of the team's greatest need, right? Like, what are we all talking about? They need high-end, top-of-the-lineup wingers. So, not that it would be impossible to do it, but you're not exactly trading from a position of strength if you were to consider a Brock Besser deal of some sort this summer. And so that kind of brings you back to, well, you'd like to have some certainty one way or another. You know what I mean? Do you really want to go into next year's trade deadline with Brock Besser unsigned and have to make a really complicated decision at that point? So I don't know. What do you think? Like, should it be a priority for the team to explore Brock Besser extension this summer?
Yeah, man. The thing is, look, we keep discussing ways this team has to get better. I don't know if there's a reality where if Brock Besser's your third highest paid forward, you're going to push the ceiling. And, like, that would be my concern. I would love Brock Besser signed for 8 years at this current number.
Yep.
And not that you can go hindsight and say, hey, 3 years ago, they should have committed to him then. But, like, in and around this number, I would even say up to 7.5. But I feel like if you sign him to, I said, Timo Meier, that's 8.8. I feel like you're waiting for year 4 or 5 of that deal where now you're getting the value of it, and now it's like, okay, we can start building around this
where the cap has really gone up. And
yeah. Like, that's my, you know, internal conflict about it. And that doesn't mean it's like, oh, they got to trade him this summer. I don't know if the resolution presents itself right away. So I don't know if that means he should be a priority. But as you mentioned, it's like, hey, going into the deadline with him unsigned would be a very bizarre reality. Because what would you do then? But at the same time, like, I do think there's, you know, team building philosophies that might go against the idea of, like, paying Brock Besser. And again, I can make a case for, like, $1 million.
But you said, like, Timo Meier has more career points in the regular season than Timo Meier in way fewer games, in, like, 50 fewer games.
Yeah.
Right? So if people are surprised by that price point, I mean, it's pretty similar, right? Scoring winger.
Philip Forsberg signed an $8.5 million deal, which would, by today's standard, would be about a $9 million deal. Timo Meier's deal, by today's standard, would be a $9.2 million deal. Right? It's easy to make that argument. If that number was, you know, 7.5, like, sign me up for 8 years for Brock Besser. I think that's awesome. And you can still go get one more marquee player and it probably fits into the overall cap structure. But right now, it's just interesting that, like, every time you look at it, be like, all right, what offseason decisions they have to make? This guy with 1 year left on his deal just kind of stands out. And I like the way you phrased it. Like, should it be a priority?
Yeah.
The thing about this management group is they're very comfortable absorbing, like, short-term, I don't say negativity, but, like, short-term conflict.
Well, they'll take on risk.
Yeah.
They'll take on risk,
They're very willing to do that. Like, even in the face of public ire, like, I always just go back to the Boudreaux thing, where at the end of season's press conference, they were sitting there rather unimpressed. And the fan base was like, what are you talking about? Like, look what they did in the back half of the season, and they doubled down on themselves, and they were proven right. And in multiple moments, like even the Horvat trade, the Hronik trade, all these things that have irked some fans, they have been proven right because they've gone on to have success.
And I think the key thing with Brock Besser is it's not just about, okay, what would they have to pay him to keep him? But, you know, we're all talking about, okay, they're going to go out and try to make a big swing this offseason, right? Do you acquire Natchez and pay him, you know, $8 million? Do you go try to sign Jake Guentzel for $9 million? And that's kind of where the rubber hits the road with Brock Besser, right? Because then all of a sudden you're talking about two really high-priced long-term wingers that you're locking up in a summer, and then you've got the OEL buyout, right? And then the math starts to get a little bit more difficult going forward. If you weren't also looking for another big-ticket item at that same position, I think it would be a lot easier conversation. But it reminds me a little bit of, to be honest, of the Filip Hronek conversation, right? Where it's, okay, like, yes, they need him, but they also need more at that same position. Mm-hmm. And if you pay Filip Hronek, is it going to limit your ability to go find that other guy at the position, that other guy on the blue line, right? And I think there's a similar thing with Brock Besser. But ultimately, what the Canucks are going to have to answer is this guy a core player? Because if he's a core player, I think you're not betting on the price going down between now and next summer. Like, that would be very surprising for me if Brock Besser was in a significantly worse negotiating spot 12 months from now than he is now.
To your point, like, he could regress and still put up 30.
He scores 32 goals. Guess what? The salary cap's going up, and you're a UFA. Like, you're in a really strong position.
I feel like it's a good point. I feel like
he'd have to have a really bad season.
20 goal scoring.
Yeah. And then at that point, are you eager to sign him long-term?
And even then, I just wonder, like, if he went to market, I haven't even looked at what next year's free agent market looks like. I can just bring up a list here real fast. But I just imagine that some team is going to convince themselves.
Yeah.
He's like, well, he scored 40.
Well, bounce back. We'll put him in the right position and he'll bounce back, right? So he's already in such a strong position that if you feel confident that this player, you need to keep this player, like, the price isn't going down. So you're almost required to go see what it would take to get it done right now, right? Because he's going to be in a position to really cash in one way or another next summer.
All right, I forgot Sidney Crosby's a UFA next year. So.
Well, got to clear space for him.
There you go.
Reunion.
Yeah.
The Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin, Sidney Crosby reunion. Terry Y checks in. Any argument to not expedite locking up Besser is ludicrous. The question is not whether to do it. It's for how much. And, you know, one interesting thing, like, this management group has obviously, as you said, they are not afraid of doing the unpopular thing. They're not afraid of ruffling feathers.
They said that from day one.
They're not afraid of, you know, hey, we acquired this guy, now we're sending him out in a deal. And that's great. I love that mentality. There also is something to be said for when you have your core group, locking them up and taking care of them, right? Like, and I don't mean take care, like, give them a blank check, right? But how many guys can be subject to that constant threat of turnover before it becomes a problem?
Yeah. So you just mentioned a name a few minutes ago, Natchez.
Yeah.
And you just said, oh, I'll give him an 8-year deal and all that sort of stuff. I always worry about locker room dynamics when you bring in
someone from the outside.
Someone from the outside and pay them right away.
Yeah.
Right? It would have been akin to, like, acquiring Filip Hronek and then immediately giving him the contract.
Yeah.
And we've had those conversations. I remember having that conversation before he even played a game. I was like, oh, all right, what is a future contract for Filip Hronek going to look like? And some people, like, were texting me, like, what are you guys talking about? He's got to play. And before you give him any money, like, see what he's like. But I just think of, like, Carlson in San Jose, right? Like, there was change over there. I think of PLD in LA. Huberdeau in Calgary. And just before you take care of your own, like, what kind of message does that send to the group you're trying to groom? Be like, oh, well, we're taking care of someone else first.
Well, especially hypothetically, like, if you don't sign Besser, you make an Natchez trade and sign him. Guy at the same position.
Correct.
Right? And you're not paying a guy who is just a beast for you in the playoffs.
It's not about Brock Besser. It's about how does Pedersen respond? How does Hughes respond?
Miller.
How does Miller respond?
Mm-hmm.
How does that group respond to you prioritizing someone external? Someone they battle with, someone that they care for. It's not that they won't like Natchez and all that sort of stuff. It's just dispiriting.
All right, we'll take a break here. Keep your texts coming in. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We are live at the Nat for a Nooner. It's the Seas and the Tri-City Dust Devils coming up at 1 o'clock. So come on by if you have time this afternoon. Brendan Batchelor joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Bick Nizar here live at Nat Bailey Stadium for a Nooner at the Nat. Beautiful day here at Nat Bailey. Come on down. See the Seas take on the Tri-City Dust Devils coming up at 1 o'clock. Of course, you'll hear the game here on Sportsnet 650 as well.
A lot of walking traffic strolling up now.
Absolutely. We're live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Brendan Batchelor. Do we have Batch on the line, guys?
We're not sure.
Oh, we do? Sure. All right. Fantastic. Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, joins us now. Batch, what's going on, man?
Not too much. Jamie, Bick, good to talk to you. I always like to talk to both of you, but I'm somewhat disappointed I'm not talking to Drance today because I wanted to tell him all about all the Art Garfunkel solo music I've been listening to lately.
Have you been boning up on your Garfunkel over the last couple of days here?
I have not. I'm not aware of any Art Garfunkel solo music. And, you know, listeners, I'm sure, correct me if I'm wrong, if there's bangers out there that I should know, but other than Simon and Garfunkel, I'm not really aware of much other work that Garfunkel did.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much it. I've learned that our listeners have a lot of really strong Paul Simon and Simon and Garfunkel takes over the last 48 hours.
More? I missed this.
Have you not been involved in this?
No.
Oh my gosh, Bick, come on, man.
let's turn this conversation to hockey.
Okay.
And what I will say about it is that I think Drance accidentally made a tremendous point. And the reason that I say that is because I disagree with him on this whole Hughes-Hronek debate. So for listeners and for Bick that aren't up on it, he compared Philip Hronek and Quinn Hughes to Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel, but tried to say that, like,
that's why you should pay Philip Hronek. Wait, I made the same reference a month ago.
Wait, really?
Yes. Your point that that's why they shouldn't pay him? Because that's the logical inference there.
Yes.
Yeah. No, Drance was like, and they're so much better together. And it's like Paul Simon famously was super successful without Art Garfunkel.
No, yeah. I went on like Hronek is Luigi to Hughes is Mario. Hronek is C-3PO to Hughes is R2-D2. He is Tom to Hughes is Jerry. I went on this great rant. Yeah, it was literally this. But yes, no, I wouldn't have made the suggestion that Garfunkel is essential to Simon.
All right, go ahead, Badge.
So what I'm saying is I actually disagree with Drance, and I think he accidentally made a great point, which is that Quinn Hughes is Paul Simon, and even if they move on from Philip Hronek, he'll still be able to churn out hits like Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard, regardless of who he's playing with. And in a time right now where they're trying to improve the top end of their roster, paying premium money for an Art Garfunkel to me doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, Hronek had a great year offensively, certainly in the first half. We know he battled with injury issues later in the season and his production dipped. And this is not to take anything away from him as a player. I think he's a very good defenseman. I just think at the numbers that we're talking about him being signed at, it makes a whole lot more sense to me anyway to reallocate that money somewhere else and find like a low rent Philip Hronek to come in and play with Quinn Hughes. Like, I still think the profile of the player makes a lot of sense. A right shot puck mover who can get the puck to Quinn Hughes more often. But I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, there are some more right-handed options on the open market this year than we normally see. And there are some other players they could bring in at a lower cap hit to fill that role. And if you do that, then you create the cap space that maybe allows you to be more aggressive in pursuing top six forwards, for an example, which I think is a greater need for this team right now than extending a guy like Filip Hronek.
Yeah, and I think for me it comes down to, if you think he's fundamentally a complementary player, right, Filip Hronek, that he complements Quinn Hughes really well, that's true, obviously. We saw that he did, but can you afford to be going super long-term and pretty high AAV for a complementary player when we know this team needs drivers, right? Like, they need another driver at forward, and I think they definitely need another guy who can drive on the blue line as well. And, Drantz has brought up, like, the Zach Hyman comparison. Hey, he's an elite complementary player who they went out and got in UFA for Edmonton. But that's because they have the drivers, right? Like, they had Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and they needed to find the complementary players around them. And I look at it, and I look at just the depth of the blue lines, with the exception of Edmonton, left in the playoffs. Like, the Canucks need someone who can drive a really good second pair, and if that's not Filip Hronek, I don't know if you can afford to pay for him just to be a really good complementary player.
Yeah, and I think in a world where the Canucks are extending him, are keeping him, are signing him to one of these deals that we've talked about, like, Patrick Alvin hinted at it at the year-end press conference, or maybe it was Rick Tocchet, I can't remember, but one of them hinted at the fact that they might need to play a part, and Hronek might need to drive a little bit more. And if you are re-signing him, that's what you're betting on. You're betting that he's going to drive your second pair, and as a relatively young defenseman too, right? Like, he's not 30, he's significantly younger than guys like Zadorov and Myers that we're talking about in terms of being brought back on this back end. I think you're also betting on an increase in upside over the next few years as well if you are bringing Hronek back. But to me, you know, Filip Hronek had a great season with Quinn Hughes. I think you can still play them a lot together situationally, but you're right. You need someone that can drive a second pair. And as much as Soucy and Myers, I think, did a great job in a shutdown role on that second pair in the playoffs, I wouldn't necessarily call either of them play-driving defensemen. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with that conversation on the back end. It looks like Myers is coming back. So you could realistically just say, we're going to return our same top four, and we're going to run it back the way we did this year because, hey, it worked pretty well. But at what cost if you're paying Hronek a lot of money?
Yeah, the thing is like the baked-in upside is if he's on a second pair and he's not on power play one, I feel like the upside of the overall impact might be a little bit overstated at that stage. Because, like, what is the high-end upside if you're paying, let's say, $7 million?
Yeah, well,
it's a large amount.
I think the question there is, how much has he been deferring to Quinn Hughes? And if he's on his own pairing where he's not the guy that has to defer to Quinn Hughes, but he's the guy who his partner is the guy getting him the puck so he can make plays all the time, then how big of an impact can he have? The problem with that, though, is that it's still an unanswered question because we never saw that happen this year because those two guys were stapled together for basically the whole season. And it's part of the reason we had conversations throughout the year about, hey, maybe you need to separate these guys at times. Maybe you need to see if Hronek can drive his own pair, because that's information that would have been valuable going into a big decision like this as to whether to extend him or whether to move on. And again, like, moving on is not just as simple as saying, oh, we're not signing him. Like, you've got to find a willing trade partner. You've got to be able to get value. So there is sort of a cost uncertainty there, too, in terms of, hey, maybe they just have to bring him back because they can't get the value on the trade market that they feel is fair. And, you know, that I'm sure is a reality of this situation. But I guess, again, what you're betting on, even though that you didn't necessarily find that information out this year, is that there is a higher upside for Hronek playing on the second pair in terms of secondary offense or secondary play driving because of the fact that he becomes the guy on that pairing and he's not just the guy that gets it to Quinn Hughes so he can be the guy.
Let me pose this to you guys here because I briefly touched on this with Sat and Dan yesterday on the roundtable on Canuck Central. Now, look, if he signs, he becomes a core guy. But the question that was asked was, like, do you view Filip Hronek as a core guy? I'll let Batch go first. I want to get Jamie's thoughts, too.
No. Like, he's not a core guy. He might be like that second tier of player that is just outside that core, like peripheral core guy. But I don't see him as a core player on this team. I guess it depends how much you define core and how much you want to expand that. But, like, I don't know, Brock Besser had 40 goals this year, and I wouldn't even argue that he's a core player on this team.
I'm with you on both of those. Yeah. I know Reach got raked over the coals for saying Besser wasn't part of the core, but I'm kind of with you. It's Miller, Pedersen, Hughes, Demko for me. I'm very strict on my core principles there on what it is to be a core player. And the guys I'm comfortable giving 8 years to are the guys I would say are core guys. And yeah, I'm not sure Filip Hronek's like that guy for me.
Yeah, well, for me, the difference in term is the age there, right? So he's, what, 26 right now?
Yeah.
So if you're giving him 8 years, you're only signing him to 34. So it's not like an issue where you're looking at having a 36, 37, 38-year-old guy making this sort of money when he may be well past his prime. Like, we see all the time that defensemen can still perform at some level into their, you know, early to mid-30s, shall we say. So I'm not necessarily worried about the term because of his age. And, in fact, term could be a weapon here for the Canucks because it could allow them to bring the AAV down if he signs longer term. And that might be the best solution in terms of making all parties happy in terms of the Canucks getting the cap hit down and Hironic getting the dollar amount that he wants and also getting some long-term stability of likely knowing where he's going to play for most of the next decade. But you know, on the face of it, in terms of, you know, is he a core player? Is he a guy that I would like to be signing that long term? Probably not. But that may just be where things go in this negotiation if, you know, they feel unwilling or unable to move on from him.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting. The more we talk about this, and Bick and I were talking about Brock Besser in the first segment, and the more we kind of go through Hronek and Besser, there's actually a ton of similarities here, right? Now, obviously, Hronik's the RFA, but both players 1 year left of team control until they're an unrestricted free agent, right? Similar ages, really good statistical profiles throughout their careers, and obviously both having fantastic platform years. I know, you know, Brock has the 1 more year left, but he's eligible for an extension, and they're kind of right in that similar place where they're undeniably really, really important players for this team, instrumental to the success of the team. But the three of us are sitting here and are reluctant to treat them as core players. And I think there's maybe a bit of a similar dynamic with Brock Besser this year. They could go and give him a big extension on July 1st, but when you think about him as now an official 40-goal scorer and a playoff performer on top of that, I mean, the cost to do that might be a lot more expensive than what the Canucks can do.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'm not going to be popular with the fan base for saying this, but there is a very strong argument to be made that you should trade Brock Besser right now. He just scored 40 goals. He had a relatively injury-free season. Obviously, the blood clotting issue that prevented him to play in Game 7 is the exception to that. He played on a great line with JT Miller. He generated a lot. And if you feel like you're not going to be able to afford what that ticket might be, especially, let's say, if he has another really good productive offensive season next year, then now is the time to move him. His value is high. He's a 40-goal scorer. He's a player that teams would, you know, really prize and would pay a premium to acquire, I think, assuming that they can get clarity on the blood clot situation and be confident that it's not going to be something that flares up again or is an issue going forward. But those are the tough decisions you have to make when you're a good team. And the Canucks haven't had these sorts of issues in a long time, but look at teams that were contenders or allowed themselves to continue to be contenders year over year. And oftentimes they had to make hard decisions. Look at the Chicago Blackhawks moving on from guys like Dustin Byfuglien and Andrew Ladd, who were really good players for them and in some cases were fan favorites and were very important to their success. Making those hard decisions often allows you to extend your window. And so I'll be interested to see what happens with Besser, what happens with Hironic, what happens with a number of these guys this offseason, because what the Canucks decide to do this year, while it's important in the short term, and I think that's what we've been focusing on more, and rightfully so, in terms of just coming off a playoff run and saying, okay, what do they need to do to make sure they can get back there next year? But it also, you know, the decisions this summer will also set up this organization either to succeed or fail more over the medium term in terms of, you know, do they get caught in a situation where they have to overpay Besser? Or you know, can they come to some sort of agreement with him where, again, maybe you sign him long term, but you bring the cap hit down and you do the same thing that you may do to Filip Hronek this summer. But, you know, these are hard decisions. They're not easy. And it's not easy to trade a player coming off a 40-goal yep. season, but there is a world in which that might be the best pathway forward for this organization.
Well, and something that makes it even more difficult, because I agree with you. If you take a step back, right, player has a career year, 1 year left before UFA, you're not convinced they're part of your core, that's kind of the perfect time to trade a player. But the problem is, and again, this applies a little bit to Filip Hronek as well, both of those guys play a position of need for the Canucks, right? Like, we're already talking about, hey, they need to go out and find more scoring punch in the top six. So I agree with you, Batch, that, like, there's a strong argument to be made for exploring a Brock Besser trade. But, man, that's already a position of weakness on the team. And if you move a guy like that out, you've got a ton of work to do this summer to try to put together a credible offensive top six.
Absolutely. And so that sort of depends on your confidence in your ability to replace those sorts of offensive numbers at a lower cap hit. And that's where their pro scouting comes in. And, you know, I'm not in their pro scouting meetings, obviously, so I don't know the kind of players they're looking at.
What do you do all day then? Come on.
Yeah, well, just put my feet up and relax pretty much now that the season's over, but let's not get into that. Yeah, you know, like, that's the thing, is this organization has done a good job of pro scouting. We've seen some of the players that they've targeted and brought in who have actually made a solid impact in terms of trades and acquisitions. And, you know, we can go down the list, Hronek, Zadorov, even Sam Lafferty is a low-cost pickup right before the season was important for them at times this year. So, you know, the answer to that question is dependent on the pro scouting they have. And if they feel like they could move out Besser and that they could bring in two or even three top six caliber players with the remaining cap that they hit that they have while also losing Besser. And, like, I'm kind of reminded of Moneyball in this conversation where, like, you know, we go back to the Oakland days that Billy Beane ran and the conversation in that movie. And at that time was, you lose Johnny Damon. It's like, well, you don't need to replace Johnny Damon in one guy. You need to replace his impact in the aggregate. So that would be how I would look at that conversation, is in a world where you're going to move on from Besser. And again, I don't think that's likely to happen. I'm just making the case that, you know, you could argue it's a good time to make that move right now for him, coming off a career year with a big contract potentially looking you in the face if he has another strong season next year. So if you move on from Besser, can you replace his impact and add impact in the top six in the aggregate with three guys that maybe aren't 40 goal scorers, don't have that big of an impact, but can you go get 320 or 25 goal scorers and up your offensive output that way?
The list of UFAs, too, and people have demands for certain guys over certain players. When you're looking at it, just the viability of of which it makes sense to bring back. How many guys are you, you know, and Tyler Myers reportedly, you know, is nearing completion, but how many does it make sense for you to bring back?
Three at most, and that all depends on two of them being bargain deals, shall we say. So,
sure.
And it also depends on whether Hronek comes back, too. So if we're saying Hronek's not coming back, then suddenly you've got more money that you could use on a guy like Zadorov. But we think
the
Myers is going
guys.
To be... Yeah,
just
yeah,
the unrestricted guys, yeah.
Yeah, I know, but the unrestricted conversation ties into Hronek because
sure,
there's cap space
yep.
tied up there, right? So I'm like, that's why I'm saying three at most. I'm saying if you move on from Hronek, then maybe you've got money to bring Zadorov back. Then you can maybe seriously look at Lindholm. We know Myers is coming back. What about Dakota Joshua? And like that to me is the conversation is we think Myers will be, you know, team friendly might be too strong, but not too cost prohibitive in terms of the cap hit it takes up. What can you get Dakota Joshua at? That to me is the question that hinges on these unrestricted free agents is if the number on Dakota Joshua can be palatable, then maybe you've got room to look at one more, whether that's Zadorov or Lindholm. And then I guess, of course, the easy answer would be to say, well, if you want to bring three back, if you want Ian Cole in as a depth third pairing option, that's probably not going to be too expensive for you. But beyond three, I think is impossible, regardless of whether they keep Hronek or move on from him. But you know, three would be the high number I would put in terms of looking at all those pending UFAs and saying, okay, those guys are going to be back. And that's why I think it's more difficult to keep the more expensive of those guys like Lindholm and Zadorov, unless you make a big move like moving off someone like Hronek or Besser.
Hey, Badge, just before we let you go here, I was just thinking, you know, 12 months ago, one of the big talking points here was the big summer, right? Like Rick Tocchet had said, hey, a lot of guys need to have a big summer, and we were all kind of going through it. All right, what does that look like? Who really needs it? Obviously, very different conversation now, but, you know, I'm sure Rick Tocchet still wants a lot of guys to have a big summer. Who stands out as kind of first on the big summer power rankings? Who needs to have a big summer for the Canucks this year?
Ooh, that's a good question. Elias Pettersson, probably.
Yeah.
Like, let's be perfectly honest, with the way things went for him late in the year and whether it was an injury impacting him or not, like this is a guy that needs to level up because his cap hit and the dollar amount on the paychecks that he receives is leveling up too. And, you know, as much as we know people were frustrated with his play this year, if that continues into next year, that frustration will reach a boiling point because that money is actually on the check as of next season. It's not, you know, in the future and,
yep,
and something that we're talking about coming, it's something that will be a part of their reality starting in September in training camp. So, you know, I think Pettersson, you can always, whether he's healthy or not, say that he could be stronger on his skates. So if he could have a big summer, bulk up a little bit, be harder to push off the puck, harder to knock down, that will allow him to have a greater impact. And, you know, in terms of guys that need to have a big summer, he has to absolutely be at the top of my list right now.
Badge, great stuff, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon. Get back
all right,
to doing,
I'm going back
get back to
listening
doing nothing
to more,
all day. Yeah.
I'm going back to listening to Art Garfunkel and putting my feet up. That's what I'm doing.
Sounds like a good one. Thank you, Batch. That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. I can't believe you missed the Simon and Garfunkel.
Was that
controversy?
This
yeah. It started,
I was off for 2 days.
Yeah, okay. It started on the crossover. And then Bruff texted me later that day, like, aghast. He couldn't believe it. And then Bruff, like, they, like, ran the clip and, like, really dug into it on the morning show the next day.
Yeah, that's all time.
It took, like, it's basically, like, 24 hours of Paul Simon discourse on the station, which is how you know it's the summer. It's
yeah.
the off-season when that's what we're
Paul
talking about.
Paul Simon discourse.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where we are. Would you pay Art Garfunkel 7x7? It's like, I don't know. Good harmonies. But I don't know. Does he have the songwriting chops? I'm just not
good
sure.
Good harmonies. I always think of a skit from This Hour is 22 Minutes.
Yeah.
It was a Hall & Oates, but it was just Oates touring.
Yeah.
Be like, all the best hits of Hall & Oates with just Oates. And it just cuts to Oates just going, And it's so good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Garfunkel without Simon.
Oates and Garfunkel and who else is in that phylum?
Well, that was there's a joke like that in The Simpsons where Lisa dreams that she's like on tour with like Art Garfunkel. I don't know if Oates is in it, but like all the like
yeah.
the leftovers
yeah.
and the crowd is there like booing them and throwing tomatoes at them and stuff.
Just wearing turtlenecks and playing offbeat instruments.
I guess like the other members of the Jackson 5 collectively would be in there.
I guess.
I mean, come on.
Tito?
Yeah. Jermaine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't name the other two.
All right, we're going to do some more naming dudes.
Oh, I'm pumped up.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I am really excited for that.
Is this your first edition of Guys Naming Dudes?
It is. Wow. And by the way,
it was your creation.
Yeah.
I've referenced this a lot.
All right,
this is
good.
Your creation. Yeah.
We had, like, when we were still working together, we had, like, three or four segments that we
workshopped some of the other ones. They didn't work.
Yeah. So, but this is a keeper.
Yeah. This one was a hit right away. I did the two truths and a lie. That didn't work.
Yeah.
We had another couple in the hopper
yeah.
that never made it out. But this is an instant hit.
Yeah, I'm excited.
It was a Jamie Dimon creation.
We were like getting warmed up before the show, and I was like, "This is the most fun I've had at work in months. This is amazing."
The Friday send off segment is like it's so much fun.
So we'll do that at 12:30. We're still deciding on the prompt. We've got one we might do, but we'll see if we think of something else.
If
here.
You have a good prompt,
yeah. If you have a good guy's name and dude prompt, send it in. Let us know.
We have one we like, but we're not married to just
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what we can do. But Tyler Zickel, voice of the Canadiens here on Sportsnet 650. We're at the Nat. We will talk to Tyler. Always a pleasure to chat with Zickel here. That's coming up next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.